Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Feel good this winter by getting the flu vaccine at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Rescue operations continue in Morocco as the number dead now nears 3,000 following Friday's devastating earthquake, the country's deadliest since 1960. And criticism is growing as the Moroccan government stands accused of playing politics over accepting foreign aid. Sekunder Kamani is foreign correspondent with Channel 4 News and he joins me on the line now from Marrakesh. And thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us. Will you explain to us what you've seen in Morocco since the weekend?
Well, we've been here a couple of days now, and the worst affected regions are south of Marrakesh in the High Atlas Mountains, where you've got small villages, some of which are almost entirely devastated, houses destroyed, barely any standing, villages where up to a quarter of the population there are either missing or dead. And the routes to get to these small villages, even prior to the earthquake, were difficult at times. We're talking about small, narrow roads, sometimes dirt paths. And of course, the earthquake made access to them even more challenging because you've got sliding land that caused boulders and large rocks to block the way. So the Moroccan army, Moroccan rescue workers have been using bulldozers to try and clear those paths. But even when we were traveling there yesterday, the day before, we'd be held up because you'd have fresh landslides, bulldozers would have to come in again. And that would really, that's been one of the key challenges for rescue workers in this crisis, mm-hmm. is trying just to get to the places. The Moroccan army has been using helicopters at times to drop food and to try and evacuate people out. But, there's a large number of these quite small villages at times over quite a wide area, and so resentment amongst local residents is quite high because they feel that not enough has been done, not quickly enough.
Yes, and I did see a headline this morning with people saying that they had felt abandoned. But given what you've seen, help is they're trying to get the help in, it's just a physical and logistical problem. Is that the case, or is there actually a lack of aid?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, it's certainly because so many areas and so many villages have been affected, then, it's taken at times around 24 hours, more than 24 hours, for rescue workers to arrive, and villages have had to basically claw through the rubble with their own hands, pickaxes, trying to find survivors, trying to recover the bodies of their dead relatives. And they've had to do that. A lot of them have had to do that alone. But there are Moroccan rescue workers also working. There are also teams from Britain, from Spain, who are here now. The UAE and Qatar have also sent aid. As you mentioned in your introduction, offers to help from a number of other countries have so far not yet been accepted by the Moroccan government. And that has, questions have been raised about that, and criticism has been leveled at the authorities here for not having accepted that. Their position is that they don't want too many countries here, making the situation more chaotic, more confusing. We have seen that they've established base camps in kind of smaller towns where they've been bringing injured people down to. Lots and lots of people are homeless right now because, of course, so many houses were left unlivable. So we've got large numbers of people living in tarpaulin tents, some of which they've had to set up themselves, some of which have been provided by charities or by the government. So it's a very challenging situation. Across the worst affected zone, there's no electricity, no water, real concerns about getting enough food to people.
And does it make sense, that logic, that we can't have everybody here because it would create chaos? I know the UN coordinates these rescue efforts when something like this happens. Does it make sense that they wouldn't respond to the United States and to France and their offers of help?
Yeah, it's certainly a question that people are posing towards them. But I mean, I would say that we have seen quite a large effort from Moroccan officials themselves, and the terrain makes it extremely difficult to get to some of these places, and they you know, at times have done quite impressive work in securing access, for example. But certainly, yes, I mean, that is why there is, you know, wherever we've gone, there has been resentment expressed by local people about why more has not been done and why that help has not arrived more quickly. And presumably, if there was more international help, that would have arrived, you know, faster. But the position of the Moroccan authorities is that it would potentially make it more confusing. So, you know, it's a question that a lot of people are directing towards them.
All right. Well, Sikandar, thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Sikandar Karmani, foreign correspondent with Channel 4 News, who's in Marrakesh. So how governments prepare for and respond to disasters like this is a question that we always ask in the wake of an earthquake like this happening, like we've just seen in Morocco. And I'm joined on the line by Graham Heaslip, who's professor of logistics engineering at Galway's Atlantic Technological University and co-author of Humanitarian Logistics. And Graham, thank you for speaking to us this morning. As we heard there from Sikandar, the Moroccan emergency services, they're continuing their search for survivors. But time here is obviously the enemy, isn't it? You've got people who are under rubble, unlikely to survive much longer if they are still alive. And then you've got the conditions where people are sleeping outside in cold temperatures and with the rains expected.
Yeah, that's correct, Mary. We're in the immediate response phase of this disaster, and that typically lasts from 1 to 2 weeks. But people who are trapped under the rubble, they, you know, unfortunately, if they don't have air or access to air, they'd only last up to maybe 96 hours. So the relief effort has to overcome this destabilized infrastructure, the poor housing. There's also limited information about the affected areas, as we heard there from the correspondent. So life-saving equipment is just being pushed to the affected areas. And then after 2 weeks, when it settles down, there'll be more of a needs assessment. It'll be completed and you'd have a clearer picture of the actual size of the requirement that's needed. It becomes available. This leads to a more targeted response where more specific goods are being sent down. But just on the coordination there with the Moroccan government, I mean, it's the Interior Ministry that are looking after this. And people may not be aware, but in 2004, there was another earthquake in northern Morocco. There was about 600 people died and 15,000 people were made homeless. And at that time, the international community arrived and they overwhelmed the Moroccan government. So maybe this is why they're being a bit cautious. Personally, I think it's not the moment to refuse aid, that they should be allowing the international community to come in, because the international community have expertise in coordinating the effort in the life-saving equipment and in setting up those base camps with tents and providing shelter, water purification, etc.
So you're saying that there may be some truth in what they're saying. They've had experience of being overwhelmed before, but that comes down to proper coordination, doesn't it?
Correct. I mean, they've had the experience of 2004, which means they should have the lessons learned. I still think that only allowing four countries in, and they're primarily search and rescue. I mean, France and Germany were also willing to put forward more search and rescue teams, which would have special heavy lift equipment as well as sniffer dogs and infrared equipment for uncovering people. I think they should have let more people in personally. I mean, the international community has huge experience in this. I mean, there was only the earthquake back in February of this year in Turkey, and indeed the Turkish government were willing to send over 100 search and rescue people as well. So they have the international community has the experience, but the Moroccan government are being a little bit slow in allowing the other countries come in, and that's because of their experience in 2004.
And now we heard there about food drops happening from the air, and in the immediate term, food and shelter will be the things that people need right now. But in the medium term, it's about money, really, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, apart from the physical products of the medicine tents, water and so on, it is about the money. I mean, the Irish government have donated money, and some of that will go through via the IFRC, the International Federation of the Red Cross and the Red Crescent Movement, because the Moroccan Red Crescent Movement is on the ground and it'll be via them. UNICEF are also there with their office, and money will be going via those areas. But they'll need it for the reconstruction phase. I mean, a lot of these areas are in rural, mountainous areas. And what we've been seeing on the television is that essentially the houses have been made out of brick and, or sorry, out of wood and mud, and therefore they're not stable. Whereas in the bigger cities like Marrakesh, whilst the earthquake hit, it didn't cause as much damage because you'd have steel infrastructures and so on. But yes, finance is going to be key.
The infrastructure around search and rescue, the international infrastructure, it's likely to come under more and more pressure, Graeme, I would imagine. I mean, only this morning we're seeing reports of flooding causing 2,000 deaths in Libya. We have this earthquake, which may not be related to climate change, but it still is something that needs to be responded to. Can the international community cope with this level of disaster coming hot on the heels of each other?
Well, it's very similar back in 2004, if you remember. There was the Indian tsunami, and everybody, that was at Christmas time. But very shortly afterwards, there was floods and a flood in Pakistan. But more and more of these events are coming around, as you said, Mary. More and more of these events are coming, and they're becoming very frequent. The international community has organized itself with regards to the United Nations being the lead, particularly with its humanitarian response depots and its the architecture it's set up in place. The IFRC similarly has a system in place for responding across the globe, and there are these cells of people that are willing to go. Indeed, the commercial commercial companies, the likes of DHL and so on, and Kuehne+Nagel, they're also part of different architecture and systems to assist in the emergency response. So over the years, this area of international response humanitarian logistics has grown. It really took off since 2004, and over time it's evolved, and we have what's called the logistics cluster, which is run by the World Food Programme of the United Nations, and they're the main coordinators of a relief effort when it goes onto the ground, along with OCHA, and OCHA just coordinate between the government and the aid community.
The specifics of dealing with the aftermath of an earthquake, we know that the people who live there, even if their buildings are still standing, they're often afraid to go back in for the fear of aftershocks and unstable buildings. That's a challenge too for the aid workers and the rescue workers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there will be aftershocks. It's inevitable that those happen. And that's why you're going to see that tented villages have to be set up for people away from the debris and away from the buildings. And that leads to more problems because the temperatures are going to drop over the nighttime, and therefore you need to get the blankets and so on in to support that community. The bigger problem here is going to be the aid community are there for the initial immediate phase, the international community, that's where their expertise lies. And then there's the handover to the reconstruction phase, which is going to be driven by the Moroccan government, and that's where the financial aid comes in. But that requires the government actually to allow the money to come in and to make the concentrated plans for recovery.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what their decision is. I mean, as they said, we said earlier, they've given that reason of logistics, but you know, if they still continue to refuse when the offer of money comes from unfriendly states, as they would see it, we might see what really is going on there. Health and hygiene risks then following an earthquake. What tends to happen, Graeme?
Well, if you look in Morocco at the moment, there's an awful lot of dead animals as well as, unfortunately, dead humans. So therefore, you have a potential for outbreak of cholera. Cholera would be the most is the disease that becomes most prevalent. That was noticeable in Haiti, to a lesser extent in Nepal when it was an earthquake, and similarly over in Turkey. So you have to be careful for disease. And also water systems, because of earthquakes, water systems will be contaminated. So you need water purification systems. And that's, again, where the international community has huge expertise in water purification and providing the relief for the local community. So these are concerns, and these are issues that the international community are well used to dealing with and have remedies and measures for dealing with it. And I think the local government, and indeed the Moroccan government, may be overwhelmed by that phase.
Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with communication systems failure, and in these remote areas the communication systems mightn't have been all that great to begin with, how does the international community, aid community, deal with that? How do they fix it?
Well, the international aid community will have its own satellite phones and communication systems, so they will be fine. But you're right, the local community will be devastated. Now, the infrastructure hasn't gone down completely. It's just in where the epicentre was, like in Marrakesh, the telephone lines and so on are still working. But an awful lot in the epicentre is physically getting people out there to get to the communities to do the needs assessment. I mean, some technology will be used by the communities, such as drones, to fly over and get needs assessment. It'll also be dropping relief, as well as the helicopters to get people up there. So, and if people have radios, one of the things we always say to people when they're planning for earthquakes is take an old radio with a battery, with batteries. Once you have batteries in it, you can hear the communication that is coming out. And the Moroccan government, of course, will be giving notifications of what to do or where to go for those people in that are in distress.
Mm-hmm. It's just a dreadful situation. Professor Graham Heaslip, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. And Sekunder from Channel 4, who we heard from earlier. Now, coming up in the next hour, hopes that interest rates would not be raised this week are fading fast. We'll find out why. Why do we stick with a TV series that we know is absolutely terrible? We're going to discuss cringe watching. And Dr. Rosemary Coleman joins us with advice on keeping your hands and nails in tip-top condition. And we're talking about skin health here with consultant dermatologist Dr. Rosemary Coleman a little bit later on. So text your questions to Rosemary 51551. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.